Thank you very much. Good morning. So lovely to be here. I'd like to start by thanking Oratora and Data and everybody that brought this day together. I know there's so many. I don't know all of you, but actually the truth is each one of you brought this day together, and it's a wonderful happening. So I'd like to say that this day, like each of you, moving right into our topic, is an actual miracle. The fact that this day could exist in this century, in this time, in this city, is a total miracle. And the fact that each of you are here today is an absolute miracle. What is the miracle? That you're actually here. What do I mean by that? I didn't choose the title, I chose what I wanted to speak about, and somebody wrote the title, but actually I think the title is fortuitous, The Secret of Our Immortality. And I know many people, when they opened the brochure, they said, The Secret of Our Immorality? What is that? Anybody who's a little dyslexic like me. So, but it's actually immortality. So what is the secret of our immortality? Why are you here today? After 3,500 years from the beginning of the Jewish people, how is it that you're sitting here today in Dallas, Texas? How is it that I'm standing here today in Dallas, Texas? It's an absolute miracle. Let's start with you. For most of you, and not all of you I recognize, and I actually have to speak for all three groups that are in this room, for most of you who were born Jewish, and then some of you who converted to Judaism, and some of you who are not yet Jewish, there's three different reasons why it's a miracle that you're here today. So let's start with born Jewish. You're a walking, talking miracle. Really, the fact that God gave the Torah on Mount Sinai, and each one of your generations, the fact that you're here today, only can be the truth because every single one of your generations from Sinai until today survived. You lived and you chose to be Jewish until today. There are so many attacks on the Jewish people that it's miraculous whoever made it through. And then so many different currents of thought throughout the ages that it's miraculous that your ancestors chose in. So you're only here today in 5770 in 2009 because of each one of those generations living and choosing to be Jewish until this very day for 3,500 years. You are a miracle. It's amazing. What about those of us, I'm one of them, who converted to Judaism? How are we a miracle? Well, we're a miracle because we saw you. We couldn't exist without seeing people who lasted for 3,500 years. It's incredible. And it's also a miracle that we were able to tap into the energy that we're going to talk about today, the energy of renewal, the energy of making yourself into something special, the energy of being able to recreate oneself. That's the energy of a convert, and it's the energy of every Jew, as we'll see today. And those of you who are not Jewish, not planning on becoming Jewish, or planning on becoming Jewish, but here today to hear some words of inspiration from the Torah, so it's also miraculous. How is it today that we have a shul built here in Dallas, Texas? It's a miracle. You're sitting inside a miracle, next to miracles. This is a day of miracles. So that really, the secret of our immortality is miracles. Ben-Gurion said, let's see, how did he say it? I wish I knew the exact quote. He said that anybody who, I think something like relies on miracles is an idiot but doesn't believe in miracles. I mean, the state of Israel is built on miracles. So he wasn't a religious person, but he understood that you can't deny the miraculous in Jewish history. He wanted to create a secular state of Israel, and he was a very educated Jew, as were the Jews of that, most of the Jews, most of the secular Jews of that generation. But he didn't want to create a Torah educational system. But later on, he bemoaned his decision a little bit when he said to himself, I wanted to raise a generation of apikorsim, and instead I got a generation of amoretsim. So he wanted to raise a generation of people who denied the truth of Torah, but instead he got a generation of people who didn't even know about the Torah at all. But we, fortunately today, wherever we are, somewhere in this room, we're somewhere on the spectrum of learning about, knowing about, living in parts, living next to people, living with, living in concepts of the Torah. So let's look at our secret of immortality. So a class that I'm teaching in Denver is Sefer HaChinuch, the 613 mitzvahs. And the fourth mitzvah in the Torah, there's only three mitzvahs in the whole book of Genesis. The first mitzvah in the book of Exodus is the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. And I want to share that mitzvah. One of the philosophers that I love is Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. And I read his Chumash, and I particularly like how much he's mission-oriented. And that's really what I wanted to share today. When they called and asked if I'd be a speaker, what do you want to speak on? I said, well, I really feel like most Jews don't know why they're Jewish. We don't know what our mission is. We know, like, our responsibility, the chain, the unbroken chain that we should stay, that we should be a sense of responsibility. But why? Why are we here? Why are we moving forward? What's the point? Why should we hang on? Why should we work so hard? Why should we be here today? That's what I wanted to speak about. And as things work out so often in my life, there's a nice convergence of, as I'm trying to think, what is going to be the tool with which I share this information, I learn this fourth mitzvah. And turns out the Rav Hirsch has 9 pages about it, about that one mitzvah. But what does he write? So that's what I want to share with you today. Anybody who wants to look up more information than I'm going to share today can look in the Rav Hirsch Chumash on, what verse is that? Exodus 12, verse 1 and 2. There's 9 pages of information, part of which I'm going to share with you today. Okay, so at the dawn of our creation, God gave us a powerful tool to constantly renew ourselves. And it actually parallels a tool, it parallels an action that God did with Noah. At the dawn of the new creation of the world, God brought Noah out of the ark and said, don't look at the earth below, look at the heavens above. You're heaven directed. You're really headed towards Olam Haba. You're in that direction. But let's take a sign from the heavens. Let me show you the rainbow. That rainbow is the sign that I'm never, ever going to destroy you again through a flood. So he shows him a sign in the heaven that's a promise. I'm not going to destroy you. Not destroy you is not enough of a promise for the Jews. I mean, we do need a promise that we won't be destroyed. But it's not enough of a promise, because not be destroyed? Well, for what? What is our mission? Where are we headed towards? Not just how will we be protected from. So when the Jewish people were born and they came out of Egypt, they were also shown a sign. God took Moses and Aaron aside and said, come outside, I want to show you a sign in the heavens, the sign that's going to be for you. Look at that brand new moon in the sky. This should be to you the first of, now we'll make a blank there, because it says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim. Right? So this sign, this Chodesh, should be for you the beginning of Chodeshes. And Rav Hirsch says, really, the root of the word Chodesh, the first meaning of the word, is new. The second meaning that we derive from new is month. So he's saying this sign in the sky, this sign of renewal, should be to you the sign of renewal. Now that you've been in Egypt for a while, and you've seen what paganism is, and you see all the bounds, actually the word Egypt means narrow straits or binding, you see how people are bound, not just bound because they're stuck in Egypt, but they're bound by a caste system. You're born into what you're born into. Can you imagine being born in India even today, where you're born into what you're born into? There's no getting out of it. You're born into a caste, and you have to be in that caste, and you can never lift yourself out. It's really the opposite of the American dream, not even the Jewish dream, but the American dream of work hard and you can achieve. Everything is within your reach if you just reach towards it and work hard to get there. Right? But that's not the case if you're born into a caste. You're born where you need to be. Or if you believe in astrology as a powerful force, that you're born under your star. And however you are is how you are. There's no getting out of that. Once you're born under a star, so that's your personality. You're an angry person, or you're, it always amuses me when people say, well, that's just how I was raised. That's how I am. No, sorry. That's not just how you're raised. That's not just how you are. You make the decision of how you are. Yes, how you're raised is a powerful influence on who you are and how you are. But it doesn't bind you into who you are. That's just the starting point. You now take the bull by the horns. You move forward for yourself. Pick who you want to be. How you're raised is just how you were started. So, or what about being born into a socioeconomic class? So that, in this country, we can move out of. In some countries, let's take India again. You might be born into your parents' debt and be a child who's locked to a loom at 7, and you have to work 12 hours a day. There is no chance of education. There is no chance of even paying that debt. There is no chance of getting out of it. That's the way it was in Egypt. That's the way it is in some places in the world still today, where people are born into what they're born into. There's no hope of getting out. And in those cultures, particularly in Egypt, they counted time by the sun. The sun. So there's a sun year, 365 days, where each February 2nd, of the year is in the cold. right? Every second of February is the same, basically, in its flavor every year. And the year repeats itself again and again and again. Shana, year, actually the root of shana means repeat, lishanot, lishnot, to repeat something, to go over it again and again and again. But when we were taken out of Egypt, God said, you know what, don't count by the year. Don't count by regular and don't count by cycles that go again and again and again and again, where it's all the same, where you're the same. You need to renew yourselves. And I'm giving you a sign that you will never, ever slip into regularness. You'll always have the power of renewal, always have the power of recreation. And that is the moon. Start by Chadash. Start counting by the months. The second of every month, not like the second of February, the second of every month is different. Yes, it relates to the phase of the moon similarly, but the second of the month of February is very different than the second of the month of July. One's cold and one's hot, one's it's different flavors in the seasons, and we do have a concept of astrology, but not the regular type that you're bound by it, but there is a different energetic flow in each month as well. Each month is different. So it's taking us out of the sameness. So not only should we not count by the sun, we should count by the moon, but we count by the moon, but only ourselves. It's lachem, to us. We count by the moon. What does that mean? Rav Hirsch explains, it's not that we're looking at the astronomical phenomena and by that counting time. It's not like time could be set. He talks about how people would say, oh, the Jews, they're so unsophisticated. They had to look in the heavens to see the new moon and count the new moon by what they saw. They didn't know how to calculate until the Greeks and the Romans came around and taught them how to actually calculate seasons and months and time. They had to rely on their eyes. Nothing could be further from the truth, because the very fact that we could look in the skies at a certain time meant that we were calculating. The whole rule of looking in the sky isn't about when will we see it. It's about our eyes need to witness it, our mouths need to give testimony to it. We need to be engaged in it. We're not a natural phenomenon cult where everything is set by what's going on around us. Everything is set by what's going on inside us. And that's the power that Hashem gave us, is look at the sky, but then come and be engaged. And if you think about it, there's many examples where we need to be engaged. And today, I'm not really a bucky on physics, but today physics is teaching us that principle as well. When things are observed, they behave differently when they're not being observed. How do we know this? Can we observe something not being observed? No. It's a tricky conundrum. And yet, things that are not observed, it turns out, behave differently than things that are observed. So again, that's as far as I know in terms of physics, but I do know that observation makes a difference. And our religious philosophy teaches us the same. Our engagement, our observation, our connection too makes a difference in the reality of the thing. So it's not that the moon itself is what says it's the month, it's us ourselves that says it's the month. Now let's move back for a second. I have a concept I want to share called container and contents. Container is what holds contents. Contents are the essence of where we want to be, where we want to go, what's our direction, who we are, what's the point of it all. That's the contents. There are people who want contents, but they never build a container to hold it. And there are people who are busy building containers, but they never fill their containers with contents. In Judaism, the container is halacha, Jewish law. There is a way to create a structure that once that's created, it holds the contents. The contents are who we are, our sense of renewal, our ability to go forward, our ability to shine a light, our ability to lead the nations into a relationship with God. Really, that's the contents. Our ability to create a personal relationship with God in our own personal orbit, to change ourselves, to renew ourselves, that's the contents. But all of that is held, forwarded by, enabled by a healthy, strong container. So again, many people build containers, they're careful in Jewish law, but they don't even know that there's contents to put in it. And you can see people who lead their lives kind of in a robotic way, doing Jewish law, but not filling it with contents. And then you see people who are all contents people. They're busy meditating and creating things and working on a relationship and trying to be giving and warm and tolerant, but often that spills out and they aren't able to hold on to it in a significant way. You really have to have the balance of the two, a healthy container filled with important contents. So let's look at that. That's on a larger level and that's on a smaller level. Let's look at the container and the contents of this particular mitzvah. What is the container? The container is the law. How do you do it? How do you sanctify the new month? So the new month has to be sanctified in front of a Beit Din, in front of a panel of three rabbis. And for this particular mitzvah, they have to be three high-level rabbis, because this mitzvah was given to Moses and Aaron. Moses and Aaron, higher level than other teachers in the nation, so it actually has to be sanctified before a Beit Din of a higher level than other Beit Dins in the nation. Then it has to be two witnesses, not just one, but two have to come before it. Now, usually one is adequate for most things of this nature, but in this particular case, it has to be two witnesses who see the moon in the sky, who come and give testimony to the Beit Din. This has to be done during the daytime. Can't spill over into the nighttime. The whole process has to be finished in the day. Then they calculate the times based on that. Calculate the whole month, every single month, saying this is the first of the month, and that means that the holidays that come on the 15th, most of them, will be then set by what day is the first. Now let's say that it works out that if you sanctify Tuesday as the first day of the month, it means that in a couple of months, or even at the end of this particular month, it's going to be Shabbos and then Yom Kippur. Not so convenient for Yom Kippur to begin right after Shabbos. So we are actually allowed to readjust the times by not sanctifying, or by the Beit Din, the court, holding off the sanctification of the month for a day to make an adjustment in the calendar, because Rosh Chodesh is considered a moed. A moed means a meeting place. It's a place where we meet God. The Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, was a place where we met God as well, and there was communication. But every holiday and Rosh Chodesh is a place of meeting. Unlike Shabbos, Shabbat, which is ordained by God, it's every seventh day, no matter what. The holidays are ordained by God, but sanctified by us. So the sanctification of Shabbos flows from Shabbos into us. The sanctification of all the holidays in Rosh Chodesh flows from us into them. We choose the time, so to speak, by this whole system of interaction with the moon. We choose it, we sanctify it, and then we meet God on our own terms on that day that we chose as a nation. So it has to do with our interaction. Okay, so that's the container. Is that we choose it, we set it aside, we sanctify it, we make it ours, and we announce to God, this is the time that that holiday is going to be. And God takes our announcement. Even if there was a mistake, even if two witnesses got together and lied, and their testimony was accepted for some reason, even on that, we continue to base the holidays, because once it's decreed, it's decreed. It's decreed by human beings, which teaches us an important principle, that Torah lo b'shamayim hi. Torah is not in heaven. Torah is not dictated by the movements of the stars and the moon and the sun, and it doesn't come just from a straight energy flow from God down. Once God gave us the Torah, Torah belongs to us. We're the ones who shape it. We're the ones who shape it l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. It has to be shaped in accordance with many different rules, but it is within human beings to shape it within structures. We have to be very careful how that's thought of and said, but it is in the purview of those people who are truly working on a relationship with God to be able to, as a group, so that they're keeping each other in check, shape Torah so that we're in relationship with God. Torah belongs to us, and it's part of our relationship, not just given to us as a top-down structure. Okay, so why did God give this to us? He gave it to us for the contents. He said, you just came out of Egypt where there is no hope for change. And even with all the signs and wonders that I did in Egypt, I couldn't wake up Pharaoh. He's chosen himself. He is an individual human being. He's a person who has free will. And yet he chose himself into such a low place that he can't be woken up. It's not possible for him to wake up and see a different reality. But you Jews, you have a long future ahead of you, and there's no way I'm going to let you slide into a slumber that's so deep that you can't be woken from it, a spiritual slumber. So what I'm going to do is the very first mitzvah that I give you, the mitzvah is renewal. So rather than saying, and the way that you could translate it is, this month shall be to you the first of months, or this renewal, it's really, you could translate, this renewal shall be to you the first of many renewals. The essence of you, you Jewish people, is renewal. That's what God is saying. You can always make yourself new. And in fact, we are created in the image of God, and one of the things that God can do is create. Now we think about our own creation capacity. We can only create with what God gives us to create with, right? But there is an aspect of Yesh Me'ayin, of creation ex nihilo, that's even available to us. And that's in our own moral and spiritual character. even, and this is particularly for converts, but even for people who are born Jewish, no matter what place that you're in, you can create yourself something from nothing. Maybe you weren't given the past that you wanted to have, that you wished you had. Maybe you weren't raised by the parents you would have liked. Maybe you weren't raised in the city you would have liked to be raised in, or in the generation you would have liked to be raised in, or with the education, or with the brain, or with the looks, or with whatever it is. Maybe you feel like something about you isn't the way you wanted it to be, the way you wished it could have been ideally, and yet you can take who you are, even if you aren't, and make it into something special. Yesh mi'ayin. We have that ability, creation ex nihilo, to create ourselves something out of nothing. How do we do that? It's a long process, and we do look around and see what kinds of things we'd like to incorporate into ourselves, but each and every one of us has the ability to seek a different quality and bring it into ourselves. That's why we have the phrase, kinat sofrim tarbe chachma, the jealousy of sages increases wisdom. We're not allowed to be jealous. Can't be jealous of something that we might come to steal. I like your car, maybe I'll try to take it. Or I like your husband, or I like your necklace. There's no jealousy like that. We're not permitted. However, we are permitted to say, I wish I was as smart as that. I wish I was as learned as that. Because that's within everybody's reach to attain. That kind of jealousy leads to a permitted action of striving to accomplish an education, an understanding, a depth of commitment that we can all seek. So we are permitted to look at other people's character traits and say, how can I incorporate that into myself? Because if we incorporate it into ourselves, it doesn't take anything away from another person. So that type of healthy jealousy we are permitted to have. So this moon was considered to be dugma lachem. That's what it is. It's an example for you. This is an example that even the moon, it starts in its phases and it starts from very small and it gets larger and then it gets smaller again and it looks like it's going to fade away, just like the Jewish people go through waves of being very tiny, coming into a period of glory, going into a period of deep darkness, but we never, ever disappear. We are considered a moon people for many different reasons. One is that we do sometimes look like we're going to disappear, God forbid, but we know that we're always there. We'll always come back. So that's number one, how the moon is an example for us. Number two, how the moon is an example for us, is that we can renew ourselves even though we go through dark times, dark periods, and yet we can always renew. And number three, how the moon is an example for us as Jewish people, is the moon doesn't have its own light. The moon is only as bright as it can be in accordance with how it turns itself towards the sun. So we Jews are as bright as we can be in accordance with how we turn ourselves towards God. God is the ultimate light, and however we turn ourselves towards him, that's how we reflect the light. When we turn away, we reflect less. When we turn towards, we reflect more. And it's completely up to us how we want to turn, because that stream of light is ever shining. And it's completely up to us how much we want to receive it. So the moon is a light receiver, and so are the Jews. The Jewish people are receivers of light, and then we're shiners of light. But we can only shine the light that we have, and we can only have the light to the extent that we turn towards Hashem. So in three different ways, national renewal, personal renewal, and then light shiners as we turn towards Hashem. So the moon is our example. Let me just take a drink for a minute. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh B'Dvarah. Okay, so this is in direct contradistinction to the pagan concept that everybody's born, and even in a way to the Christian concept, that if you're born into evil, you are evil, you need an outside savior to bring you into goodness, but that the evil is inherent, that every day stems from yesterday and every tomorrow stems from today, that there's an unbreakable cycle, and that only something from the outside can break that cycle. But this concept of yesh mi'ayin, of creation ex nihilo, is a concept that we have the power within ourselves to go in the direction that we want to go. It's interesting to see that today in this world, the philosophy of paganism is there in bits and pieces. We're not such big philosophers altogether, as a nation, I mean, as an American nation, as a Western civilization. There's not a lot of philosophy going around, and yet paganism is on the rise. I just read an article in the New York Times that talked about the rise of paganism. And the invocation to the Wisconsin State Assembly just last month was delivered by a Wicca priestess. I was pretty shocked by that. that she's given legitimacy in a mid-state, in a Midwestern state, in the heart of what we would think of as American normalcy, a Wicca priestess is giving the invocation. So, and they just won a big legislative battle that now with the army, any fallen soldier has currently, or previous to this legislation, had the choice of being buried with a tombstone that had a Star of David, a crescent, or a cross on it. And now you can choose also a five-pointed star if you're a pagan. So, yeah. So that's a soldier's legal right to have that. So it is actually, I mean, something that we think of as completely bygone history is actually on the rise as people are looking for some type of spirituality, but I don't know, not in a healthy sense or not, I don't exactly know why people are looking towards that. Part of the reason is that people are looking for contents without container. People want to find something that has meaning, but they don't want to do the work to tie that meaning into their lives. And it does require work to build a healthy container to hold important contents. So people will look for systems, whether it's Scientology or chanting or meditation that's outside of systems. That's what the whole Kabbalah movement is. And I don't mean Kabbalah, I mean Kabbalah, right? The whole Kabbalah Center system is all about how can we get contents with no container. That's what they're looking for. That's why people are interested in Jewish mysticism as separate from Judaism. So, because people do recognize contents are important. Let's find what gives us meaning in our life. But I don't feel like doing all that work. So, but the work is what creates not just the container for the meaning, but creates you into a container. Because really, Torah is compared to water, not only because it's life-giving, but because water takes any shape. So whatever you pour water into, that's the shape that it takes. And it's the same thing with Torah. I'm sure, unfortunately, that we've all come into relationship with people who have Torah, but they're not pretty people. Because they didn't create a lovely container to hold the Torah in. That's why it says, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, the way of the land, or good manners, or appropriate behavior, comes before Torah. First, you have to create a beautiful vessel. Then you pour Torah into it, and you have a lovely, lovely combination of beautiful vessel and wonderful contents. So each mitzvah recreates us on a physical level so that we can hold the contents better. So, let's see, where are we? Okay, so then we have this. So we have this mitzvah, this concept of constant renewal, of making things new, of looking at things from a different way, of constantly recreating ourselves, and you see that it definitely manifests in us, whether it's on a spiritual level or on a scientific and an intellectual level. Look at how many Jews have won Nobel Prizes. It's from looking at things differently. It's from thinking differently. It's from thinking out of the box, because that is a quality inherent in the Jew. Think differently, think new, constantly innovate, constantly go forward, constantly strive hard, constantly look at something new. And that's what we do. Even if we're not doing it inside spirituality, which we should be, we're doing it outside of it. But in every area of our lives, the Jew is hardwired for renewal, for sticking around, for perseverance, and for renewal, constantly thinking of new things. But it's more than that. That's not really our mission. That's the tool to our mission. So what is our mission? Let's just look at the second half of this verse. This month shall be to you, let me see my verse here. I'll read it in Hebrew and then I'll translate it. HaChodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim, rishon hu lechem lechodshei hashana. This renewal, this month, shall be to you, not in the skies, but to you, you sanctify it, the beginning of months, rosh chodeshim, the beginning of renewals. Rishon hu lechem lechodshei hashana. And this month, meaning the month they just got out of Egypt, shall be for you the first of all months. When you're counting months, which one's the first, count this one to be the first. So what's the month that the Jews got out of Egypt? What month was that?
Nisan.
Uh-huh. Good. Nisan. So they got out Nisan. So the mitzvah is, the first half of the verse is, look in the sky, see renewal. Remember that that's a sign for you, always renew. The second half of the verse is, count time from Nisan. But when is Rosh Hashanah? Tishrei. That's kind of strange, right? We have the beginning of the year in Tishrei and the beginning of the year in Nisan. And actually in the Mishnah it talks about four beginnings of the year, but the two main ones that we deal with are Tishrei and Nisan. So it's strange. We count the months starting in Nisan, but we count the years starting in Tishrei. So the beginning of the year is in the seventh month, and the beginning of the months is in the middle of the year. So it's a strange thing, right? So we have this dual time system going. We have it in years and we have it in days. So it's interesting to think about. Rav Hirsch points out that the year that we count years, the year that we count all earthly phenomenon from, that we count harvest from, that we count Shemitah from, that we count animal tithes from, all that starts in Tishrei. Tishrei, the year that starts in the fall, goes through the fullness of the year. So it starts in darkness, it goes into deeper darkness, it goes into light, L-I-G-H, let's see, light, like as in calories, light, deep light, strong light, and then back into darkness. So the physical year is born in darkness and ends in darkness. But because physical things really are limited, have a limit, and they begin from a certain physical point, but they have a limitation. Anything that's physical has a limitation and will die. So the physical year begins in the dark, moves into the blossom of light, but then ends again in the dark. Whereas the spiritual year begins in the light, moves into greater light, experiences deep darkness, but emerges into the light. The spiritual year, all spiritual things, truly spiritual things, are light-producing things. And even though they might experience darkness, they're born in the light and they end in the light. They're directed towards the light, towards renewal. The year begins and ends at a period of renewal. And the same thing with the day. We know that we count days, Jewish days, from night till night, because it says in the verse in the Torah, and it was evening and it was morning. Excuse me. So we know that we start from the night and we go to the night. And that's how we count Shabbos. Starts at night and goes till the night. So a physical day begins in the darkness, experiences light, experiences dawn, experiences the fullness of day, and ends in the darkness. But a spiritual day, where do we have an example of spiritual days? This is a tricky one. I didn't know this, so I'm not going to make you figure out the answer. In the Beit HaMikdash. Rosh Chodesh is a day of spirituality, but we don't count it like a spiritual day, meaning the day itself is imbued with a different kind of spirituality, but where we count days differently is inside the Beit HaMikdash. Inside the Beit HaMikdash, the day is counted from morning till morning. So everywhere outside the Holy Temple, we count the day from night to night, and inside the Holy Temple, we count the day from morning till morning, so that we have a dual count there too, that the day begins in light, experiences the fullness of light, goes through periods of deep darkness, but ends again in the moment of potential. So that's a constant cycle of light leading to potential, even though it goes through darkness. And that's really, the Jew leads this dual life. We're physical and we're spiritual. We're of this world, but our secret of immortality is that we're not of this world. We count separately. We have bodies that are born from dirt and go to dirt. But our souls come from light and are going to light. And we have to know that we keep this double count all the time of where our physical body is headed and where our souls are headed. Our souls are headed towards constant renewal. Our bodies, so far, we haven't figured out the constant renewal program for our bodies. So we just get stronger glasses and more Lycra and whatever it is that we need to do. And so that we can try to trick ourselves for a little while that there's a hope of renewal, but there's not. Eventually we give it up, and eventually we go to our grave, hopefully in peace, at the end of a long and healthy life. But that's because we know that the physical body is not actually us. We count differently. Our immortality is our soul, and it's what we produce with that. It's the fact that we can reach out with our soul, with the light that's inside of us, with the potential that's there, with the power of constant renewal, that we can make ourselves into something totally different any minute of our lives. We're never a prisoner of the last minute. And the destination that we set yesterday doesn't have to be the destination that we're aiming towards today. We can constantly decide on something new. That is the power of the Jew, is recreation each and every minute of our lives. We're always capable of being like that moon and moving towards something new. And that's our message. That's really our mission to the world, is that no human being is locked into this. That's why we work for social justice. That's why as Jews, even those who aren't religious, have worked for civil rights and social justice and the ending of the violence in Darfur and the bringing down of the Iron Curtain, it wasn't just so the Jews of Russia should be free, it's so that all human beings in Russia should be free. Now, they also have to make the collective choice to elect a government when they have the space to do that, that will allow them to be free. People have their own free will at play. One of my favorite quotes I mentioned to a few people here from the Bostoner Rebbe is that he told a friend of mine who's a therapist that the greatest gift God gave to man is free will. Unfortunately, he gave that gift to our children as well. So each of us has that power of free will, and each of us has to see that power in another. And that power in another, each person can choose their way into a magnificent reality or choose their way, conversely, God forbid, into darkness. But everybody has the capacity to choose themselves into any direction that they want to go. And sometimes they're not sure of the direction they're choosing themselves into. Sometimes it's good to have a friend on the outside and say, "Do you feel like I'm choosing in a good direction?" Or sometimes God sees that one has chosen in a direction that he really is hoping a person won't go, and he'll give them a big shift, whether it's a strong friendship or a women's conference or sometimes something hard, an accident, an illness, a financial loss, something to get somebody to wake up and say, "Let me think about the world differently." So each one of us has the power to think anew every single day, every single moment, but also the power to teach that to the world. That the fact that we're still here today says there's something powerful about the Jews, something to look at. And people are. You see, today, I converted almost 30 years ago. I was rare. Today, it's not at all rare. Every time I mention I converted, I get quite a few people come over and say, "I converted too, I converted too. I know somebody's converting. I was converting. I am converting." You know, like, I'd say probably a quarter of Orthodox Jews today, of something like that, maybe it's a little bit less, are converts. We really have a strong influx because a lot of people, it is right before Mashiach is coming, and all those outlying sparks, whether it's reincarnations of Jews who may have left Judaism earlier who want to rectify and come back, or there's also the concept that those people among the nations, that when God offered the Torah to the nations and the nations said, "No, we don't want it," there were individuals within those nations that said, but I do. I want it." So those individuals had to go through history and eventually be gathered up also as part of the Jewish people. But even the fact that Judaism allows converts is a proof to this concept that constant renewal can happen. It is based on the individual choice of each and every person. Who do you want to be? What do you want to make yourself into? And that's our message as Jews, is that everybody can choose. Who do I want to be? What do I want to make myself into? But we don't drop humanity off there. We give humanity some direction. Who do you want to be? Well, let's show you what the Torah teaches. So what are some of the things that we as Jews have brought to Western civilization? If you want to learn more about this, it's an interesting book written by Ken Spiro called World Perfect, and it's good Thanksgiving reading. Because it really talks about the origins of this country. But some of the things that we Jews have brought to Western civilization that we consider regular things today are the concepts of universal education. Every single person should be educated. And if you think about it, the Americans have really taken on much of this Jewish philosophy in reaching out to the world, trying to give laptops to African villages so that children, and Hotwire Africa, so that people can have a hand crank, access to the internet, so that there's access to literacy and thought. Now, I'm not saying every computer is good and everything on the computer is good, and yet the concept of giving people access to education, access to thought, the ability to think so that they can grow on their own terms, this is a Jewish concept, and it's something that Western civilization is now teaching to the world. So, universal education. Blind justice. That justice should be blind and that we shouldn't be we shouldn't judge based on somebody's looks, based on somebody's stature, based on somebody's position, based on somebody's money, that justice has to be blind. So that's a Jewish concept and is now a concept of Western civilization. Are we there yet? Not quite, but we're working on it. We have it as an ideal. Individual dignity, that every single person has an inherent dignity just because they're a human being. Not because they're a doctor or a lawyer, not because they can contribute, not because they make a nice income, not because they have a lot of seichel, but just because they're a human being, there is an inherent dignity in each and every person. Again, we're not totally there yet in our own ability to live that, but that is a Jewish concept that we're working towards, and it's a concept that we offer to humanity. If you're choosing, choose this. World peace. That we should all get along. that every nation should work not just in the absence of war, but in the consonance of our strengths, that we should be able to bring together in a synergy what every nation offers and use that to move all of humanity forward. This is a Jewish concept. It's a concept that we offer to the world, that we don't need to be fighting each other and taking, grabbing what the other nations have, but offering to each other so that we can all grow as one human planet full of people led by the Jews. The Jews lead this. Let's see, what do we have so far? Oh, dignity, the importance of the family. So inherent dignity of every human being, universal education, blind justice, world peace, and then the importance of the family. The importance of the family. We know that Abraham was the first Jew, not the first monotheist. And he isn't even actually called the first Jew. He's called a Hebrew there. He's not called a Jew. But we sitting here today are not called the B'nai Abraham, right? What are we called? B'nai Israel. We're not B'nai Abraham. We're not B'nai Yitzchak. Two amazing individuals, our forefathers. They were individuals who weren't able to alone change the world. It wasn't until we were a family, 12 tribes, 12 sons who chose to be in the program. Because at that time, people weren't born into it. You were born into it and you got to pick in or out. Abraham had two sons, one picked in, one picked out. Yitzchak had two sons, one picked in, one picked out. Yaakov had 12 sons. He was a little nervous, but in the end, they all picked in. And it was only through that family, that we were able to transform the world. And we are one family. Think about us. Think about in this room, right? How much we care for Shifra. How much we care for other people that we never met. How much we'll dance. I'll tell you a story and you'll see how much your heart dances for a Jew you don't know. So after the Mumbai murders, 5 Jews were killed. And a reproductive endocrinologist in the East said to himself, 5 Jews were taken out of the world. I want to put 5 Jews into the world. Find me 5 Jews who can't afford fertility treatment, and I'll treat them for free. So one of the women in Denver, Hani Sarah Bransky, she had a 10-year-old son and no other children, just one 10-year-old son. And they had given up 10 years. They're a rabbinic couple. They didn't have enough money to put in more money into fertility treatments. They spent everything. They were done. But then somebody called them and said, this reproductive endocrinologist will treat you for free. So she said, great, I really want more kids. So she started with the treatments, and on the day of the actual main treatment to get her pregnant, a few days before, her mother passed away. And so now she has to fly from Denver to Pennsylvania to sit Shiva. So she calls the doctor and says, I'm sorry, I can't do the treatment, I'm sitting Shiva. So I'm not near the doctor that you arranged it for. He said, don't worry. He said, I will find you a doctor in Pennsylvania who will do it for free. So she got the treatment in Pennsylvania. She came home pregnant, and she just a few weeks ago gave birth to twin girls. So, right? How do we care about that? It's like so, it's huge for us. We're thinking, wow, 2 more Jews, one for Mumbai and one for her mother that she was sitting Shiva for during that time. It's amazing, and it's so special. You don't know her, you didn't meet her, and yet you care because we are one family. We really are connected to each other. A friend of mine told me when she's walking across the street, she's 60, she just made Aliyah. So she's crossing the street and she trips and she falls. She said before she hits the floor, somebody's there with a pillow to put under her head. Somebody else has a handkerchief to wipe her knees. Somebody else is giving her water. Somebody else is chastising her for wearing heels that are too high. Somebody else wants to know where she lives and tells her that he has a brother who can give her an apartment twice the size for half the money. So... That's the way it is, because we are siblings. We help each other and we annoy each other so much. I have a mildly retarded man who calls me almost once a week, and he's not observant, but he's very Jewish. He really cares. He was unfortunately abused quite a bit as a child, which is why he's retarded. But he tells me again and again, as he tells me that he doesn't eat kosher, but he'll say, but Mrs. Burlow, he can't pronounce my name, Mrs. Burlow, I want to tell you, I love my Jewish people. I want to say it again. I love my Jewish people. I just don't always get along with them. And I love that. That rings through my mind. Yeah, I love my Jewish people. I don't get along with every single one, but it doesn't mean I don't love every single one. You don't have to get along with every single one, but to love every single one, we are one family. And as a family, that's how we transform the world. Really in the collective, that as individuals, we work on growth together, but then we join together as a family. And as a family, we're a very powerful force for transforming the world. We've done a lot so far. We have a lot more to go. But our mission as Jewish people is to totally change all of humanity. To be the, one of my expressions is to be the rennet in the cheese of the world. Right? So we're tiny, we're statistically insignificant, but imagine this entire room was filled with milk, a vat of milk. How much rennet do you need to change this much milk into cheese? Not much, a couple of tablespoons. And that's who we are in relationship to the whole world. We're a couple of tablespoons in the whole sea of humanity, and yet we're the rennet. We change everything. So if we understand how powerful we are, we can join together and transform ourselves and transform the world by transforming ourselves and transform ourselves by transforming the world. That's the mission of the Jewish people. Completely change everything. Bring humanity to its ultimate fruition. So I want to give everybody a bracha here that you should be able to tap into the energy of constant daily renewal, particularly on Rosh Chodesh. We have a chance to renew and renew again and remind ourselves of renewal and move towards creating something new out of yourself, the person that you want to be, the family that you want to have, and the wider family of the Jewish people so that we can affect the wider family of all of humanity and bring the whole world to a good place. Okay. Who's next? Am I supposed to lead people to the next place? I guess now we all go to our next session, right?
So. Okay, thank you.
Very nice. Thank you so
thanks. Much. Thanks. My pleasure. Let me turn this.